As always, it's a great blessing to be here, and I'm excited to have another opportunity to study God's Word with you tonight. Tonight we're going to continue the series on the book of 1 Corinthians. We're going to continue into chapter 10 this evening. Let's begin by reading 1 Corinthians 10, verses 1 through 14. 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 14 says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted, and do not become idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, people sat down to eat and drink, and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry." So here in this section of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we see Paul laying out a lot of different examples from the Old Testament and different examples from the Israelites. And then he compares those things to different issues that existed in the church at Corinth at this time. Now he made some of those comparisons as a warning to the church at Corinth not to follow some of the sins that Israel committed. Also, in addition, Paul made a couple of comparisons between Moses and himself. Moses as the leader of the nation of Israel throughout a lot of their early periods and throughout the Exodus as well. And he compared himself to Moses, he as the one who had brought God's word to the Corinthians, the one who was teaching them and trying to lead them to follow the path that God had set. Now it seems like he did most of these things to help combat his detractors. Now, if we were here for our previous study, you'll remember that we talked about these different people in Corinth who were trying to degrade Paul's reputation among the Corinthians. They were trying to hurt his influence in Corinth. And in that, they were also trying to pull the Corinthians away from him to themselves in order to start teaching them falsely. And so, Paul's efforts in this chapter are largely to stop those detractors once again, and that theme will continue in this chapter. To remind ourselves of this theme, let's read a couple of passages about these detractors. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 3, Paul simply says, "My defense to those who examine me is this." So those who examined him are the detractors that we're talking about. They had doubts in his integrity and his motives and things like that. 2 Corinthians 11 verses 12 through 13 goes a little more in depth into Paul's defense to his detractors. 2 Corinthians 11, verses 12 through 13. It says, "But what I do, I will also continue to do, that I may cut off the opportunity from those who desire to be just as we are in the things of which they boast. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ." So here Paul goes a little more in depth about the way that these false teachers were deceiving the Corinthians. He says that they had transformed themselves into apostles of Christ. So they were trying to seem just like the apostles, just like the ones who were spreading the gospel at this point. And so they were trying to seem like that when they were in truth, as it says there in verse 13, false apostles and deceitful workers. So these were the people that Paul was trying to combat with some of these things that he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Now, before we really get into our study this evening, let's look at a few of the comparisons that we'll go through throughout our study tonight. First of all, let's look at Israel and Corinth and some of the similarities between them. The nation of Israel followed Moses. Now, obviously, they were following God, but Moses was the one who helped them in their path of following God. And similarly, Corinth, in their path of following God, Paul was their leader, and he had a lot of influence there, and he had a lot of, he was a great deal of a teacher to them, and they respected him in a lot of different ways. In addition, we see in what Paul says here in chapter 10, which we'll go into more depth, that the Israelites took spiritual food and drink. And this compares as well to Christians everywhere, but also in Corinth, taking communion. The Israelites, over time, they had a great deal of trust in Moses and they followed God, but they lost that trust and they stopped placing their trust on God and following him. And the Corinthians at this point were in danger of losing their trust in Paul and in God. And that's why Paul made all of these statements to try to build their trust back and try to build their faith so that they would continue following God. So those are a couple of the similarities that we'll look at tonight between the Israelites and the Corinthians. In addition, let's consider a couple of similarities between Moses and Paul. When we look back just prior to the Exodus, we'll remember that there was the burning bush. God came to Moses in this burning bush and selected him specifically as the one who would help him take the Israelites out of their slavery in Egypt. And God also handpicked Paul. So they were both specifically selected by God. Moses went to God and he received the law from him and he brought it to the Israelites. And Paul had a great part in bringing God's word and Christ's teachings to the Corinthians. So there are a couple of similarities between them that will come up in our study as we go throughout chapter 10 this evening. Also, let's read Romans chapter 15 and verse 4 just to lay a little bit of a foundation for us in this study. Romans 5 and verse 4, it says, "For whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we, through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope." So here Paul, in his letter to the Romans, was explaining to them that whatever was written before and the Old Testament, the Old Law, was written for their learning, and they were examples for them to learn from. And so in this chapter, in the early parts of this chapter that we'll study tonight, Paul was using those Old Testament examples to help the Corinthians, and they can still help us today. Whatever was written before, we can learn from. And so in this study, this just helps us to have a basis for what we're going to study and some of the outline of what we're going to go through, and just to understand the importance of what Paul was saying in this chapter. So with nothing further, let's read the first four verses of 1 Corinthians chapter 10 once again. The first four verses, it says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." So here Paul was explaining some of the things that the Israelites did in their trust of Moses and of God as well. And all of these things demonstrated their trust in Moses and in God as their leaders. Now, first of all, he said that they were under the cloud. What did he mean by that? Exodus chapter 13 and verse 21 shows us what he meant by that and what the Israelites were doing that he was speaking of. Exodus 13 and verse 21. It says, "And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night." So here we see that the Israelites followed God in this pillar of cloud. Imagine the step of faith that it would take to follow this pillar of cloud, which is God, wherever it leads. Now, they most likely didn't know where they were going at a lot of points in their journey. They went countless miles not knowing. But they took that step of faith. They trusted God, and they trusted Moses as their leader under God to lead them in the right way. And so they made that step of trust to follow this pillar of cloud, and they were under that pillar of cloud, as Paul said. In Hebrews 11, verse 29, we see what it was speaking of when Paul said that they passed through the sea. Hebrews 11 and 29 says, "By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians, attempting to do so, were drowned." So here in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 29, it refers back to something that happened just after the Exodus. Now, they'd exited the land of Egypt, and they were fleeing from the Egyptian army, and God allowed them to cross over the Red Sea. Now, we don't know exactly where they crossed, but just to give a visual representation of what this would have meant to them, here is a map of the Red Sea. Now, the minimum width of this Red Sea is 15 miles, and the maximum width is 170 miles. Now, 170 miles sounds incredible for them to cross this Red Sea on foot. Now, God made a way that these waters could be parted and they could cross on dry land. So imagine crossing 170 miles with a literal wall of water on each side, just wondering if it's going to collapse. But even if we say it's the smallest portion, a lot of people say they crossed one of these forks of the Red Sea at the top, even if we say it's the smallest portion, it's still 15 miles. Imagine walking 15 miles, not knowing if you're going to get drowned any second. And they took that step of faith. They trusted Moses as their leader. They trusted God to provide for them and keep the waters back. And they kept walking. And they walked across the Red Sea. And so this, again, is an incredible demonstration of their trust of Moses and of God in following them in really difficult circumstances. Paul also said that they were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. So what does he mean by them being baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea? Well, basically, if we look at baptism today, it is specifically for salvation, but it is also a commitment to Jesus Christ. When we are baptized, we make a commitment to serve him and follow him. Now, the Israelites, when they followed this pillar of cloud, when they passed through the sea, fleeing from the Egyptians, yes, they were saved from the Egyptians at that point because God drowned the Egyptian army, but also they made a commitment to their trust in Moses and to God. And so that's why he said they were baptized into Moses, because they made a commitment to follow him as their leader under God. Now, this is going to come into play a great deal more when we tie it back to Corinth. Just think about what Paul's trying to, the point that Paul's trying to make here. He's saying they made a commitment to trust Moses and to follow him. And he was expecting them to trust him as a messenger from God. Trust him and follow him. Don't listen to those other false teachers who were trying to pull him away. Trust him as he led them toward God. And so that's the theme of this chapter that's going to keep coming up. This is the thing that Paul was trying to make them see. They needed to trust him just as the Israelites in these different things trusted in Moses. Paul also, in his discussion of the Israelites and their different steps of faith and trust in God, he talked about them eating spiritual food. In John 6, in verse 31, we see what the spiritual food was. It refers back to the spiritual food that they ate. It says, "Our fathers ate the manna in the desert. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." So the Israelites were in the wilderness, and they were hungry. They needed something to eat. And so what did they do first? Well, because of their trust in God and in Moses, they said, "We need food. Please provide for us." And they trusted that God would give them what they needed. And he did. He gave them this manna, this bread from heaven. And so it seems that this would be why Paul called it spiritual food, because it came from heaven. It was sourced by God. And so they received these things because they trusted in God and asked. They trusted in Moses as their leader and asked him to ask God. And so this, again, demonstrates their trust that they had in their spiritual leaders. In Exodus chapter 17 and verse 6, it talks about their spiritual drink, such as Paul spoke of as well. Exodus 17 and verse 6, it says, "Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So in a very similar circumstance, the Israelites were there in the wilderness. They needed something to drink, and so they asked. They trusted, and they asked, and God provided for them. He provided a way that Moses could strike this rock, and water would be provided from it. And so at this point, again, their trust paid off because they were provided for in their request. And so they had this spiritual food and this spiritual drink provided for them. And this compares to the communion that we take of today. Again, let's think about the sign of commitment in this. They had a trust in Moses. They had a trust in God. And because of that, they asked. And that showed that they were willing to follow. They were willing to follow what Moses did and willing to follow what God told them. And today, when we partake of the communion, we are showing our commitment and our respect to Christ. So it again all ties back to the New Testament church, and it all tied back to Corinth. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 1, Paul explains a little bit about a connection to one statement that he made in this explanation of the spiritual drink. He said that they took of this drink from the rock, which was Christ. And basically what he was saying by that was, it seemed like they were just following Moses. And sometimes they made statements that explain that they felt at some points like they were just following Moses. But in truth, they were following God. They were following Christ. And so today, or in the time of the Corinthians, Paul was asking them to follow him, not just for the purpose of following him, but because he followed Christ. In 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, it says, "Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ." So when Paul asked the Corinthians to trust in him as he followed God, he wasn't being greedy for some type of power. He wasn't just wanting the attention that these false teachers were trying to take from him. He wanted them to be able to follow God. And he was specifically selected to guide them on that path. So he wanted them to be able to follow God, and he was the one who could help them to follow God. And so that's the effort that he's making here, to show them, follow me and trust me as the Israelites trusted Moses, and then you'll be able to follow God. In 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 5, we see that the Israelites' trust in Moses and in God did not always stay intact. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 5, it says, "But with most of them God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness." So here we see that besides all those times that they showed trust in Moses and in God, aside from all of those times that they followed him, they ultimately failed in their trust to him and in following him. Because with most of them God was not well pleased, and they died in the wilderness. We see the original account of that in Numbers chapter 14, verses 1 through 2. Numbers 14, 1 through 2, it says, "So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness.'" So at this point in their journey, they had just made it to the promised land, and they sent in the 12 spies just as God commanded them to do, and 10 of them came back and said, "We can't take the land." And so the Israelites, after following God and following Moses out of the land of Egypt, across the Red Sea, through all of these perils, and being provided for every single time, said, "Nope, we can't do it. This is just out of our reach. We can no longer trust in God. We can no longer trust in Moses to help us follow God. This just won't work." So their trust ultimately failed, and they stopped following what they needed to do. And because of that, we see the result in Numbers 14, 28 through 29. Numbers 14, 28 through 29. It says, "Say to them, 'As I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in this wilderness, all of you who are numbered, according to your entire number from 20 years old and above.'" The Israelites, in their complaint against Moses and against God, said, "If only we had just died in Egypt or died in the wilderness," and God said, "You'll get your wish." And they died in the wilderness because their trust in God failed. And so although they had these great demonstrations of trust, and they followed Moses, they followed God, their trust failed, and there were consequences for that. Now imagine the symbol that Paul is creating. He's asking the Corinthians to follow him. And he uses this explanation of the Israelites. When their trust failed in Moses, then they were punished. And when the Corinthians' trust failed in Paul and the other gospel teachers, and when they followed, or if they followed these false teachers, they would also be punished. And so he goes into this explanation of what they needed to do and what they needed to watch out for so that they wouldn't follow the same path that the Israelites followed. In 1 Corinthians 10, verses 6 through 11, he explains what they need to watch out for. It says, "Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, and do not become idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come." So here Paul explained all of these things that the Israelites had done when their trust in Moses and God failed. And so he's explaining to the Corinthians, don't follow their footsteps and lose your trust in me as your gospel teacher and in God, and follow the same paths that they took. First of all, he mentioned lust. And in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16, we see how lust is from the world. 1 John 2 and verse 16 says, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." And so we see that lust, an evil desire, is something that is from the world. And also that lust can quickly become something much more. James 1, 14 through 16 shows us how lust brings sin. James 1, 14 through 16, it says, "But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren." So Paul warned the Corinthians about lust, and he warned them about it because if they followed that path, this is what they would receive. Lust brings temptation, and temptation, if we're not careful, can lead to sin, and sin brings death. And so ultimately, if the Corinthians lost their focus on God, lost their trust in him, and followed this path of lust after things of the world, they would find at the end of that path death. And so Paul gave them a warning about these things. In addition, he warned them about idolatry. Now, in our society today, it might seem strange for someone to come in and say, "Well, you Christians need to make sure you're not idol worshipers." But in their society, that made complete sense because idolatry was such a huge issue in their society. So Paul warned them not to fall into idolatry. It seems with this warning and in its context here that most likely these false teachers were also trying to pull them back into idolatry. So that's why this warning was so important at this point. In Exodus chapter 32 and verse 1, we see an account of Israel's idolatry. Exodus 32 and verse 1, it says, "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.'" So at this point, Moses had gone up onto Mount Sinai, and he was receiving the law from the Lord to bring it back to the Israelites and explain to them what they needed to do. And he was delayed in returning to them. Now, I'm not sure how long he was on the mountain, but it sure wasn't long enough for the Israelites to say, "Well, he's not coming back. Let's make new gods." It doesn't make sense for them to say, "Moses has been gone longer than we expected. Therefore, he's not coming back. So let's just move on." They lost their trust in Moses returning. They no longer thought that he was going to return. And therefore, they just moved on to worshiping idols. In verse 6 of the same chapter, we see that they did indeed worship these idols that they created. Exodus 32 and verse 6 says, "Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. So this is the passage that Paul was quoting in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 when he said that they sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play, speaking of their idolatry at this point. And because of this idolatry, we see in this original text that 3,000 men died because of this sin. Again, we see that when people in the nation of Israel lost their trust in Moses and lost their trust in God, it led them on a path straight to death. They would suffer because of these sins that they committed in their lack of trust. And one of those, as we see here, was idolatry. In 1 Corinthians 8, verses 5 through 7, it talks a little bit about issues of idolatry in Corinth and why they needed to beware of it. 1 Corinthians 8, verses 5 through 7 says, "For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is one God, the Father of whom are all things, and we for him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, through whom are all things, and through whom we live." Now listen. "However, there is not in everyone that knowledge. For some with consciousness of the idol until now eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled." Now we've talked a great deal about this meat sacrificed to idols and how different people viewed it in a different way. And we see here once again that the Corinthians, or some of the Corinthians, didn't have the confidence that these idols weren't true gods. Now after they had already converted to Christianity, they still had doubts about these idols and about this transition that they'd made. They still had doubts about whether idols were gods or not. And so we see why this issue of idolatry was such a large issue. As I said before, it seems like these teachers were trying to pull them back into idolatry, but in addition, they were already struggling with it. They still had some doubts about it. And so this was a large issue in Corinth, and it was something that Paul definitely needed to remind them about and warn them about, as he did here. Next, he mentioned sexual immorality and how that needed to be something that was avoided, and he used the Israelites once again as an example. In Numbers 25 and verse 1, it says, "Now Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab." So we see here that the Israelites committed sexual immorality with the women of another nation, and in that, they committed two sins against the Lord. Because, first of all, he obviously has forbidden them at this point to commit sexual immorality, but also he forbade them to mingle with the other nations. And so they committed sexual immorality with other nations. And so this was a huge violation against what God had told them to do. In Numbers 25, verses 8 and 9, we see the result of this. It says, "And he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through." So the plague was stopped among the children of Israel, and those who died in the plague were 24,000. So here we see the result of this fornication in the nation of Israel. God and Moses started this basically how some of the Israelites would go and try to stop this fornication that was occurring. And so we see one man here going in and killing a man and a woman who were guilty of fornication. And this stopped the plague that God had sent on them because of their fornication. But up to this point, the plague had already killed 24,000 people. So even before this plague was stopped, it had already killed 24,000. And so the consequences were still huge. And again, we see that when they stopped following God and when they stopped trusting in him, that's when they faced these consequences. That's when they suffered. In 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 1, we see again that this was already an issue in the church, and it was something that they had been struggling with. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 1, it says, "It is actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you, and such sexual immorality as is not even named among the Gentiles, that a man has his father's wife." And so Paul was warning them about something that they were already struggling with, something that was prevalent in their society once again. And so this was something that they needed a warning and a reminder about. And think about the real message that he's trying to portray here. He wants them to keep trusting in him as the one who is trying to help them follow the gospel so that they'll keep following God. Instead of following these false teachers who are trying to pull them away to idolatry and with it, the ritual fornication that occurred in the city of Corinth. And so he's trying to help them to avoid the path that these false teachers were trying to lead them on. In Numbers 21, verses 5 through 6, we see another thing that Paul mentioned, which was tempting Christ, which the Israelites apparently did and therefore were punished once again. In Numbers 21, verses 5 through 6, it says, "And the people spoke against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread." So the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. I think it's really interesting to see how sad of a state the Israelites were in at this point. Remember that manna that God offered them when they said, "Feed us, we're starving"? Well, now their souls loathed that worthless bread. And they lost all respect for Moses and for God and for the great things that God had provided them, for his providence for them in their travels. And so at this point, we can see that they had just ultimately lost their trust in God and their will to follow him. And because of that, they turned against him and they murmured against him. They complained about some of the things that were going on. And so in that, they tempted God. They tried him. They upset God. And he punished them for it. We see that fiery serpents, God sent fiery serpents into them, and many of the people of Israel died. Again, ultimately following this path toward death. In Numbers chapter 14, verses 1 through 2, we see the final thing that Paul mentioned as an example of the Israelites and their failings and their lack of trust, and that is murmuring. In Numbers 14, 1 through 2, it says, "So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness.'" So we read this passage before, but this provides a great example of the Israelites and their complaining or murmuring against Moses and against God. And so we see them just losing their trust, losing their faith and hope that God had provided them. And again, they complained against Moses and Aaron. They complained against God. And the Corinthians were guilty of some of the same things. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 10, we see what apparently some of his detractors had said about him and perhaps convinced some of the Christians in Corinth of. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 10, it says, "For his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible." So basically here, these people said, Paul sounds really good in his letters, but he's not really that impressive of a guy. His bodily presence is weak. His speech is contemptible. He's not really the leader that you think he is. Do you imagine the Israelites, when they lost their trust in God before having to wander in the wilderness at the land of Canaan there, do you imagine them saying, "Moses just isn't the leader we needed. Moses just isn't the great leader that God wanted him to be"? Do you imagine them saying things like that? Well, I imagine the Corinthians saying some of the same things. Maybe Paul isn't the leader that we need. Maybe Paul can't offer what we need. Maybe we should follow these other guys, these false teachers, these detractors who were trying to bring them back to their old lifestyle. And so they probably complained at some points about Paul and said things about him and complained about some of his characteristics, as we see here. And so all of these things all tie back to the church at Corinth. Some of the things that they were either guilty of or some of the things that were a severe danger to them at this point. And so Paul encourages them, "Please continue trusting me as the one who's giving you the gospel and who's trying to help you to follow God. Please trust in me." When the Israelites trusted Moses, they always succeeded, because Moses helped them to follow God. They succeeded. God provided for them. Everything went right. And when the Corinthians were following Paul, who was directly inspired by God, they were going to succeed. So Paul encouraged them to trust in him and to follow God. To conclude our study tonight, let's read 1 Corinthians 10, verses 12 through 14, where he gives a few final warnings to the Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 10, 12 through 14, it says, "Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, he will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry." Here he says, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. What do we tend to do when we stop trusting the one who's leading us? We're going to tend to rely on ourselves more and more, to think we've got it under control, we don't need this leader, so we stop trusting in them and we stop following them. And so Paul here, if the Corinthians stopped trusting and following Paul and stopped trusting and following God, they were going to start relying on their own ability to decide what in life they wanted to pursue. And when they started thinking that they had it all under control, they needed to beware because they were headed to a fall. So Paul warns them about this fall that was imminent for them. They needed to beware of those things. And he also said, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. God's provided this way of escape for you. They were facing temptation and they were facing different struggles from these false teachers and from just the sin around them in the city of Corinth. And they needed to realize, we can get out of this. We can flee it and we can escape it. God's provided a way. And if they trusted in him, they could find that way to escape from the temptation. We can take courage from these things as well. As we see here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, how Paul continued warning them about all of the things that they needed to beware of from the examples of the Israelites and how they interacted with Moses and how they followed or lost their trust in God at different points in their path. We can take courage, I think especially in these last few verses where it says there's no temptation that we can't overcome because God's provided us a way. Trust in him and follow the way out that he's provided you. Tonight, if you're not a Christian and you'd like to be baptized this evening to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, we'd love to help you tonight. Trust in him and take that step. Also, if you're already a Christian but you feel like your trust in God has perhaps wavered and perhaps you're not following him like you should, we want to help you as well. If there's one of you in the class, please come while we stand and sing.